Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now this week, I'm joined by my colleague at Front Church, Mike Neff, as we break down an eventful weekend of racing at ISM Raceway. Then, Ryan Truex calls into the show to discuss his runner-up finish in last weekend's Xfinity Series race for Junior Motorsports. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you to subscribe to the Front Church Podcast and leave us a review. Those 5-star ratings will help us out tremendously in search of partners. Now let's talk Phoenix with Neff. All right, Neff, it was kind of the Kyle Busch show this weekend in Phoenix. Swept the weekend again for the 12th time in his career. Led a race-high 177 laps on Sunday. Really dominated the race. I know he had to pass Ryan Blaney late in the going, but, I mean, the best car won on Sunday, clearly.
Yeah, certainly looked that way in the... I think the shocking story out of it all was that Kevin Harvick really wasn't a factor. And that was interesting because for the first time in a while, Harvick said that they unloaded fast and they weren't really having to make a lot of changes to find speed early on. And lo and behold, they turn around this weekend and it seemed to have kind of gotten away from them. But yeah, there's no doubt that that 18 team is hitting on all cylinders right now. A little surprised that they didn't pull off the 3-sweep in Vegas. Unfortunately for them, they had a mistake on pit lane, and we've seen it all season long so far anyway, that pit lane miscues are really truly a penalty.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Kyle even mentioned in the post-race interview that he feels, you know, really stupid for that penalty last week because he could have 5 straight NASCAR wins, which would be insane. Yeah. but you know, it's ironic that he's won the last 2 races at Phoenix in the Cup Series. And since I guess you can't really call it a reconfiguration because of the placement of the new placement of the start finish line, you know, kind of on the backstretch. But he's won in every race he's ever entered there since then. So, they're definitely hitting on all cylinders. The only team in the series with 4 top 10s. And, yeah, 177 laps led, more than half the race. I mean, I don't know, man. Is he kind of taking over Harvick's spot? Because, you know, you're talking about Harvick a little bit. He finished 9th and really ran between, I don't know, 3rd and 10th the whole day. There was one restart where he restarted 3rd on 2 tires, fell to 7th, then another restart right after, fell to 12th. So Ronnie Childers called him into pits, restarted 21st, and that was, the last segment of the race where he raced up to 9th. So just kind of off all day, which was kind of ironic, was like you said, he mentioned that he had the speed and it felt like 2014 where he dominated both races.
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix has been his playground for a while.
Yeah.
And you felt like, similar to Jimmy Johnson at Dover, you know, when he just showed up and even on days that they struggled at the end, they would figure out a way to be there and just pull it off. And the last 2 times now, the time before, Harvick was much more in the mix and kind of slipped up at the end. This time around, yeah, they were just kind of there. And it's really kind of felt that way with Stewart Haas in general this year. Last year, they came out of the gates gun blazing, and really for most of the year, they were the dominant organization across the board. And it seems like this year, they're just that tick off, although Almirola ran really well on Sunday, so maybe they're getting it. It's just, you know, you've got a new package and it's going to take a little to figure it out. And I feel like Joe Gibbs has got it. And ironically, the one team for Ganassi Racing has kind of got it going on too.
Yeah. Almirola's run well really all year so far in the first 4 races. I don't know, maybe it's the transition to the Mustang, but then you could say like, look at Team Penske and how dominant they've been, even though, you know, they didn't win this weekend. Ryan Blaney's He still had the fastest car in qualifying, obviously. He led 94 laps. Probably the second best car on the weekend to Kyle. But, you know, 2 years ago when Stewart Haas transitioned from Chevrolet to Ford, they struggled. I shouldn't say struggle, but they weren't as quick as they were what they ended the year, obviously. And so maybe that's something to do with it now that they had to transition from the Fusion to the Mustang. So, I don't know. That might just be an excuse, too. So,
I'm thinking it's more the whole aero package thing.
Yeah.
I think that just the greater downforce, higher speeds in the corner, lower speeds at the end of the straights, it's just a different transition for how the car sets into the corner. And yeah, I'm sure it's a different feel for the drivers, and it's something they got to get used to. And it seems like at least that's where, so far anyway, this year, that's where their struggle's coming from.
Yeah, that's something hard to talk about for us because, I mean, we don't know what that feels like. You know, we're not race car drivers. I know you're very technical and talk to a lot of the crew chiefs and, you know, we talk to a lot of the drivers, but we can't actually feel that. We don't know how, you know, it's hard to talk about because we don't live it. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny to me when I talk to racers at all levels at how different guys want the car to do different things and how you can get Jeff Gordon and put him in Jimmy Johnson's car and he can't get out of his own way because Gordon liked the car really tight, Johnson likes the car really loose, and yet they're both able to go fast. And you get to this new package and it's pressed out in the track more because of that big rear blade. But when you get back in traffic a little bit, your balance changes more dramatically, I think, because of the fact that when you take air off the nose, it's really planting the rear of the car and it makes it much tighter. So I think that the teams are still learning how to get that balance right on the car so that when you're in traffic, you can handle, but when you get out front, it doesn't make you so loose that you can't control it.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't seem to matter the aero package, whether it's in truck, Xfinity Cup. Kyle Busch always rises at the top. So we've talked about this the last 2 weeks because he's won races the past 2 weeks in some division. Now, if he's up to 199. Yep. So it's very, you know, he's in both races this weekend at Auto Club at, in Xfinity and Cup. There's a very realistic chance that he gets 200 this weekend at the first track that he got number one in the Cup Series.
Yep. And we will be having a special podcast when that happens. I've actually also been informed that I'm on, and I'm going to forget the name of the column now. I'm going head-to-head with Vito Pugliese this week on it because Vito is a die-hard Richard Petty fan.
Two-headed monster.
So we're going to have, that's it. So we're going to have a discussion in the two-headed monster column about it. And again, I'm not naive enough to say that it's the same thing. The point that I make, and a lot of Petty fans don't like me for it, is that I think this is a greater accomplishment by Kyle than it was by Richard. And my point being that Kyle, I'm still researching all of the statistics of their races, but I'm pretty sure that Kyle has never been the only car on the lead lap
no.
of any of his victories. And Richard did that 91 times. Richard was him and one other car, I believe it's either 160 or 162 times out of 200 wins. So the competition was just different, and he was running against fields of 20 or less for 20-some wins. And, you know, you just didn't have that. Kyle has started dead last, it's either three or five times, and gone on to win races. The lowest Richard, I believe, ever started was 16th. And so it's a different animal. They're both amazing accomplishments. Kyle's never going to get to 200 Cup wins. I understand that. Anybody that understands basic math has to realize that you're not going to win 10 races a season for 20 years. I mean, and that's another stat I'd like to go through and look at. I think we've only had a dozen or so seasons since modern time, you know, 72 on, running 33 races or so a year where we've had somebody win double digit races. And there's no way you're going to get to 200 at the Cup level now because we don't run enough races. So it's a different animal, but I feel like this is a greater accomplishment. Yeah, you can say he's down running in the minor leagues if you want, but you're still running against guys that run in those divisions full time and guys that have been in the sport for dozens of years, and it's not the dramatic difference in equipment that people like to point out, because if it was, the Kyle Busch trucks would finish 1, 2, 3 every week, and they don't, so the driver's got to be part of that.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get an argument from me. I'm Team Neff on this one. I do think it's a really, you know, it's obvious. You see everyone saying that you can't really compare the two, but I think you can compare the two to a degree, because when you look at Kyle and you look at Richard Petty, obviously two of the greatest of all time, but Kyle, like you said, the competition just seems to be so much greater now. If you said 91 times that Richard Petty was the only car in the lead lap, it's almost half the races that he's won. So, yeah, and just think like 8-10 years ago, Kyle was dominating the Xfinity Series, sure, but they also had Keselowski, Carl Edwards, Joey Logano, all these, Kevin Harvick, all these big name drivers that went back down and ran the Xfinity Series, and he was still beating them. So, I don't know. Kyle's just a kind of a once in a generation talent, in my opinion. And whenever he gets behind a race car, doesn't matter if it's truck, Xfinity, Cup, he's going to be one of the favorites to win. Doesn't matter the track. So,
and I'll throw, just to play devil's advocate, if it was Dale Jr. doing this, you think we'd be having these discussions about how it doesn't compare?
Right.
You'd have the hardcore Petty fans fighting it, but it wouldn't be as broad stroke as it is. I think it's just that Kyle's a more divisive personality, and I think that's part of why people get upset about it, that if it was somebody else, and I mean, you can pick most of the rest of the field. I could say, I would bet if Brad Keselowski was doing it, people would probably get it in their mind too, just again, because Brad speaks his mind. And Brad is one of those guys that some people don't like because of that fact. I personally think it's what makes him an outstanding spokesperson for the sport, and I think it's good that we have him in the sport because he's a bit of a voice of reason when some others don't speak up. So, I think it would be completely different if it was somebody else, but the bottom line is Kyle Busch is one of those guys, like a Tony Stewart, like an A.J. Foyt, like a Mario Andretti, that can get in just about anything and win, and the fact that he's chosen to support those lower series, whether because he just enjoys it, which is part of it, or also because of some sponsor obligations where he has to do it. Either way, I enjoy watching him race, and that's one of the things that I love about racing, is that you can show up at a short track on a Wednesday night and see somebody from the Cup level come out and race against the local guys. That's not something you see normally in other sports.
Yeah, and the sponsor obligation is a big part of it. Dale Jr. said last year at Richmond that because he ran that race, it brought Hellman's, I think, on for 7 other races for other drivers at Junior Motorsports. So by Kyle running, say, what, he can only run 5 truck races now, and I think Cessna's the sponsor, that brings sponsorship throughout the team, not just for him. So that's definitely a part of it. But I feel like the whole comparison, it's just like the Jimmy Johnson, Richard Petty, I guess Dale Earnhardt comparison of 7 championships. I think Johnson's feat is greater than Petty's for sure, because he did it in the modern era at a time where competition was the best. So, that's a whole other topic. But
oh yeah, and one of those things, and I've heard Chocolate Myers even pointed out that I didn't realize early on in my fandom, was that in Dale's time, the defending champion had first pit selection every week.
Oh wow!
It wasn't the pole sitter. So you had Dale taking that first pit stall every week, and we've seen what an advantage that can be. So if you imagine over, 6 seasons or so, take that away, he may have lost a title or two. You never know. So it's each thing is a different era, and rules evolve. That's the way that I appreciate the fact that Richard won 7 championships with 5 different point systems. I mean, that's a pretty amazing feat in and of itself there, is that whatever they threw at him, he was still the best, and that's why they call him the king.
Yeah, for sure. Not taking anything away from Richard Petty in this discussion, but I think we'll have...
You run the rules that you're given.
For sure. I think we'll have a special podcast probably next week, because Kyle's probably going to get 200 this weekend.
I feel, keeping my fingers crossed that something happens in the Xfinity race, so it's a Cup win that puts him at 200, just because I think that would be... A little easier for people to swallow. Not a lot, but a little.
I agree with that. Now let's move on to this Phoenix race. Ryan Blaney finished 3rd, led 94 laps, as I mentioned earlier. Really needed a strong run, because coming into the race, he didn't have a top 20 finish in the first 3 races. So, a good performance for the number 12 team.
Yeah, I was kind of worried about them a little bit. And last year they came out guns blazing in Daytona and were the dominant car and got caught up in that incident late in the race. And this year they've just, for whatever reason, it just seems like something has bit them every weekend and they haven't really been in the mix very much. So it was good to see them have a strong weekend, come out fast, get on the pole, run up front all day long. It was a good effort by them, and hopefully they're gonna continue that going forward to live up to the expectations of the other Penske guys, and maybe we'll see Menard jump up in there with them too.
Yeah, I mean, Team Penske was fast in practice, but Kozlowski had the flat tire, obviously, which I think hurt the suspension in the right front. And then Logano was just 5th to 10th all day, finished 10th. But Blaney was, you know, all weekend long the standard barrier for that team, which is good for him. I think he needed that personally because they've had speed all year. They just haven't gotten the finishes. And at the end there, him and Kyle were, they had a really good battle for a few laps when Kyle caught him. But also doing it while saving fuel. So that was kind of interesting. And then Martin Truex Jr., who pitted on the same lap as them under a caution with like 90 to go or so, he was flying. He was 8 seconds back and got it down to a second. A few more laps left, he might have had a new winner.
Maybe. That's one of those where you look at it and you realize that the leader manages the race. And we saw it at Atlanta. You know, Martin got to Brad, and had it been 10 more laps, yeah, I think he'd have got by him. But Brad knew what the gap was that he had, and he backed off just enough to maintain that to the finish. I think Martin actually got a little closer to him than Brad wanted over the last couple laps, but he was managing that gap. And I think the same thing was on this one. Kyle knew what he had for a gap, and I think he was just making sure that he maintained enough of a cushion. If he had to push it a little bit harder, I think he probably could have.
Yeah, Truex and Cole Pirn have proved, though, that they've got, all season long so far, that they've got one of the best cars on the long run. Same as for Atlanta, like you said, he caught Kozlowski at the end. And that they're really touting this on the broadcast all weekend long. In practice, he had, I think, the top 20 lap speed. And then in the race, too, he was always good on the long runs. He might fade at the beginning of the run, but then soar towards the front as the run went on. So we got to second, another runner-up finish for Truex, and he, you know, they're going to Auto Club this week. He won by 11 seconds there last year, so
yeah.
I don't know, maybe him and he can bring the 19 back to victory lane for the first time since 2016.
Yeah, and it's cool, I think, that we're seeing that this year with the removal of the driver-adjusted track bar,
mm-hmm.
that now you have cars that are good on the short run and cars that are good on the long run. And that flexibility is or lack of flexibility is causing the teams to have to make decisions about how they want their cars to run. And Truex so far this year, they've chosen to be a long run car, and they're working on trying to get some short run speed out of it, but their main focus is that it's good on the long run. And so far it hasn't panned out into a victory yet, but I think it's only a matter of time before they're going to get the 19 to victory lane, and it'll probably lead to multiple victories once they do.
For sure. And last week's podcast, guest Eric Almirola finished 4th, Daytona 500 champion this year. Denny Hamlin finished 5th. But now, I want to talk about Chip Ganassi Racing, because for the third week in a row, they're the top Chevy team, with Larson 6th, Kurt Busch 7th this week. Jimmy Johnson was the next Chevy, right behind an 8th. Chip Ganassi Racing is, in my opinion, and it might be hard to dispute this, I think they're the top Chevy team.
Yeah, so far this year, you can't really deny that. And in all honesty, I think you put a lot of that on Kurt Busch.
Yep.
I think Kurt Busch coming over there with a bit of a chip on his shoulder because he's got a one-year contract. And he knows that he's getting near the end of his career, and it would have been nice to have a 2 or 3 year deal so he had a little bit of comfort before he had to climb behind the wheel every week. But they gave him a one-year deal. He's got to prove himself. And the fact that he's with McCall, who, again, Matt McCall, I think, is one of the brightest minds in the garage, and we're seeing that come to fruition, that he's figuring it out and getting the feel for this car, and Kurt lays it on the line all the time when he's in the car. And I think the two of those together have kind of started to figure out this new package already. And that has kind of drug Kyle Larson along with it. I think Kyle's been able to benefit from that as well. So yeah, you put a former champ together with a smart crew chief that lay it all on the line all the time, and you're going to end up doing some things. And sure enough, the end result has been they are the Chevy standard bearer, and the Hendrick folks are starting to look a little better, but they still got a ways to go.
Yeah, I think it was impressive, though, especially Larson, because he qualified 31st. And we'll talk about qualifying here more in a minute. I think you know where I'm going with that. But Larson qualified 31st, so really disappointing run. But after the race, he said that he gained most of his positions on restarts because there wasn't much passing throughout the day, in his opinion. And really, I mean, after the race, I think all the drivers kind of said it was really hard to pass, which is typical at Phoenix, but it seemed more so this year with the 750 horsepower, which is the same as last year, but the bigger spoiler. So,
right.
I was impressed by Larson. He's had some good runs at Phoenix in the past. I think finished third there last fall, but to come from 31st to 6th, I mean, when it's hard to pass, kudos to him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that when it's hard to pass, he's usually going to rise to the top because, again, that dirt background, he figures out different ways to attack the track, different ways to attack corners and set people up and be able to get around them. Phoenix is one of those tracks that seems to suit itself to dirt guys. And I don't know if it's because of the fact that we run Silver Crown and sprint cars out there during the season, and some of those guys have already got laps before they get there in stock cars. But it just seems that guys that are good on dirt, and I haven't looked since Harvick had his domination there, but for the longest time, Ken Schrader was the winningest driver at Phoenix. And it wasn't because of his cup prowess. It was because of his ability in open wheel cars. But it's, again, those guys that are good on dirt, Phoenix seems to bring the best of it out. We've seen it with Larson. He was one that was running pretty good when Newman took him out to make it to the playoffs a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's true. What did you think about the restarts, though? Because they were pretty wild, and we've seen that all year long. But 4 and 5 wide at Phoenix.
I hate that they can drive on that infield part on the backstretch. I mean, I understand it makes for great TV and great excitement because guys are all over the place. But come on. I mean, you're driving through the RV lot for all intents and purposes. And I see that, and then they came to the Roval. And I forget who it was at the Roval kind of cut a corner really good to make a pass, and it got penalized. And I'm like, what's the difference there than going through the infield at Phoenix? It's the same thing. So yes, restarts were exciting. Restarts are always exciting. That's because everybody's bunched up, and we know that passing's hard, so people take chances on fresh tires. But I really wish they would paint that whole infield and then be like, all right, if you want to go down there, go ahead. Now that it's paint, you ain't going to get any grip, and we'll see what a man you really are.
Yeah, it would be slick.
It would make it different. Just, I don't know. I think you should have to race on the racetrack. And I understand getting on an apron, but that's way more than an apron when you're diving 80 feet from the racing line.
And that sets up for an awkward kind of entry into what's now turn one, used to be turn three, but they're still going 4 or 5 wide through there. So the restarts are definitely, they're fun to watch for sure. I don't know.
Yeah, but when that car comes slinging back up in there, you get people that make decisions.
Yeah.
And sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I don't know if they're fun from the driver's seat. I guess it depends on what line you're in and you know, how you do on them. But you kind of hit on this earlier, Neff. I want to transition over to Hendrick Motorsports. Jimmy Johnson finished 8th, second top 10 of the year. Chase Elliott had a restart violation right at the beginning of the race and really could never rebound, finished 14th. And then he had William Byron 24th. And then Alex Bowman had kind of a disastrous of a day with 2 flat tires, finishing 36th. They had speed this weekend, which is definitely a good thing. More speed than they have really all year, except for qualifying the Daytona 500. But what was your take on it? Because only Jimmy Johnson got the top 10, and I really thought this could be Chase Elliott's coming out party this year.
Yeah, that's one of those deals that you get yourself behind on lap one, and it kind of messes with your mindset for the whole day. And, you know, he finished ninth in the first two stages, so he worked his way back up some, but it just felt like he was mired back in that, in the back of the top 10 and could never really make hay once he got to that point in the field. So, yeah, I felt bad for Chase, but, and I liked that O'Donnell came out and basically said, we're not going to, you know, we're not in the business of checking for wheel spin if you beat somebody to the line, unless it's just egregious, the wheel spin, that we're not calling it. It's going to be black and white. If you beat him, you beat him, and it's a penalty. So that rule has been around for an awful long time, and everybody knows it. So the one thought I had was, and I know depending on who's race directing, it can fluctuate a little, but if he had immediately, like, got on the binders and let Blaney get back in front of him before they got to turn one, they may have let it go.
Yeah.
But the fact that he stayed out there and led the whole lap, he kind of shot himself in the foot at that point. But the team in general, yeah, it was nice to see they had some speed. Jimmy Johnson seems to finally be getting some stuff figured out and getting in the mix, getting up there, shaking it up with some people. And, you know, they're making some progress. I still feel like they got a way to go. We got to remember that William Byron's only in his second year. Still making mistakes, still learning things. And there aren't a lot of people that are like Denny Hamlin jumping in a car after being in late models and 14 months later winning races. So it takes a little while to learn how to run up front and win in these things. It is the top level of the sport. And I think Byron's going to get there. I think Elliott had the car this weekend and just that mistake really bit him. And Johnson was doing pretty good. Yeah, Bowman, unfortunately, I think the first flat really damaged the car. And yep, the second was just a matter of the car ended up doing it again and they got out of it. Which was a bummer because he was my pick and he looked okay at the start. Finished fourth in the first stage. And looked like he was going to be in a mix. And then all heck broke loose once he cut that flat tire. So we'll find out this coming weekend. We're on a two-mile track, so it's Kyle Larson's playground. We'll see what other people can do.
Yeah, I think with Byron, I mean, yes, this is his second year in Cup and fourth year in the top three series, but he's only been racing for 8 years. We got to remember that. So there definitely has to be some patience. I've personally expected a little bit more out of him. And this year too, because I was looking at the point standings yesterday and right now, 15 of the 16 drivers from that are in the top 16 made the playoffs last year. The only difference is Ricky Stenhouse is in and Austin Dillon's out. I thought William Byron would be not solidly in the playoffs this year. And I granted we're four races in, so, you know, a lot can change, but he's kind of just there this year so far outside of winning the pole for Daytona.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right. I think, again, like you said, we're four races in. Some things are going to change by the time we get to the midpoint of the year. People figuring out this package and what it takes to go faster and how to drive it. And I think you'll see him consistently in the top 10, probably having the occasional top fives and running up front. I do feel like this year he's finally going to break through and get that first win at the Cup level. I don't know that he's going to compete for a championship yet. I mean, he'll get a win and probably be in the mix, but I think he's got a ways to go before that really happens. But I've seen him from Legends cars all the way up, and he is a very talented driver, so he's going to figure it out.
Indeed. Now, I alluded to this earlier, but qualifying, Neff, something you don't really ever see, a fight during qualifying. I know I've never seen it. Larry McReynolds said he's never seen it, and I'm going to go off him because he's been around the sport for years. Daniel Suarez, Michael McDowell had an issue in qualifying where Suarez thought McDowell...
Couple issues.
Yeah, for sure. Originally, Suarez thought McDowell, you know, kind of blocked him on his hot lap, and then Suarez, a spotter, told, I think McDowell was on his hot lap, I'm not sure, told him to go up the track in front of McDowell to block him. That's dangerous. to begin with. Yep. And McDowell's pissed about that. So Suarez went to confront McDowell. McDowell shoved Suarez. All hell broke loose. McDowell ends up on his back. What's your take on this? Because it was crazy.
My take, and I maintain this at all times, is that pit road fights should be treated like hockey fights. The drivers fight it out. When somebody hits the ground, the NASCAR officials break it up, and it's over and done. And nothing drives me crazier. Drew Blickensderfer's a friend of mine. Get out of the mix. Let the driver settle. That fight should have been over the minute McDowell hit the ground, because Suarez made him look silly. He came at him with his helmet and his Hans on, and Suarez threw him down like Andre the Giant grabbing Hulk Hogan and throwing him on the ground. I mean, it was ridiculous how easily he threw him to the ground. But I wish we would have more of that rather than guys talking crap and crews getting involved and punches not being thrown. I don't want to see us having total pandemonium melees on pit road every qualifying session. But when you get guys mad at each other, mad enough that they're ready to throw down, let them throw down. And it'll be over and done. Because you get this stuff where guys get mad at each other and they don't, and then they start rubbing each other wrong on a racetrack. And we get cars torn up, and it costs the owners money. It costs these teams time away from their families because they got to get these cars fixed back up. And it just lingers and lingers and lingers until we see something like we had at Martinsville with Kenseth taking out Logano. You know, and that didn't have to happen if whatever it was, five races before that when Logano took Kenseth out, if Kenseth had gone over and they'd thrown down right then and there. It would have been over and done and we'd have been on with it. So it's my take is when guys are that mad, let the drivers go at each other. Somebody hits the ground, it's over and done, and we go on. And I think you would not have these. I mean, Kurt Busch and Jimmy Johnson still hate each other. They will tell you flat out on camera that everything's cool. But behind closed doors, they would throw down today if they got the opportunity. And it's because for years they have had run-ins and have never swung. And if they would just swing at each other, that would all go away. And I just, I feel like it would be good for the sport. I think you would get better ratings. I think people would talk about it a lot. But in the long run, it would save owners money, save teams time, and we would not see some foolish stuff happen on the racetrack from time to time.
Yeah, I'm surprised Kyle and Brad haven't gone at it yet, physically. Because they've had a handful of runners.
Especially since Kyle went down and threw down on Joey.
Right.
In the pit. So, yeah, I'm legitimately surprised that hasn't happened. Because we've seen Brad in the mix, although it was not by his own doing with Jeff Gordon.
Right.
Kevin Harvick kind of helped him out on that one. And Kenseth went after him, too. And I don't know that Brad was really a willing participant in that one, but he's done. But yeah, I'm with you. As many times as those two have rubbed each other wrong, it's kind of surprising that Kyle hasn't gone down to pay Brad a visit.
This one, though, this weekend was interesting.
Why was McDowell trying to steal his shoe? That was the part I could not figure out. I'm like, Blickensderfer's got a pin on the hood. He's not going anywhere. And McDowell's trying to steal his driving shoe. Yeah. I'm like, I realize front row might not be the highest budget team, but you got to steal driving shoes?
Oh, man.
Just not to mention, I'm positive Suarez is not the right size shoe for McDowell. I promise McDowell wears a much bigger shoe than Suarez does.
Those are good points, Neff. But it's interesting because if you think back to the Daytona 500 right after the race, Joey Logano gets out of his car, confronts Michael McDowell. Now Daniel Suarez goes and confronts Michael McDowell. And sure, Michael McDowell he shoved him first to start everything. But these are all four teams that Michael McDowell is getting in trouble with. In the top four teams, Stewart, Haas, and Penske.
Yeah.
So, front row wants to take this next step. Well, I guess don't piss off the upper echelon of Ford.
Well, but at the same time, that may be part of them taking the next step.
It could be. You're right.
Before, I don't know that McDowell is in the mix with these guys that much. Yeah, yes, he is at Daytona. He's a good plate racer. But during Bristol qualifying before, I don't know that he was necessarily up in that mix with the other four teams. And now he feels like he belongs up there, and you get people messing with him. He, in rightfully so, gets bowed up a little bit. And I appreciate the fact that he stuck up for himself and went, and there wasn't a lot of jawing. That was the one part I did like. You didn't have guys standing there yapping for 2 minutes before somebody got mad enough to take a swing. Suarez walked up and McDowell threw down, and Suarez tossed him on the ground like a ragdoll. It was fun, and it ended quickly, and again, I think it's over. I don't think you're going to see those guys have any kind of issues now because they settled it on pit lane.
Yeah, I love the passion for sure, and it was so, you know, obviously they started 27th and 28th, so they had to ride in the truck together. They're talking, you know, Fox catches them talking to each other in the truck. That had to be so awkward, and it happens a lot when you have a run-in with someone, whether it's the week before, 2 days before, and then you
That's
get in the truck.
That's why, you know, you talk about Brad and Kyle. I would love to see them put those guys in the booth to cover an Xfinity race together.
Oh, man.
That is what I want to see.
That would be definitely be interesting. Neff, any final thoughts on the Cup race before we briefly hit on Xfinity?
The only thing I would like to see, and I don't know how they do it, is if they can make that pit lane a little shorter in Phoenix. Tough. Good golly, it is a long time to drive all the way down that pit lane. And when you get drive-through penalties, it's almost two full laps by the time you get all the way through it. So I like that there's a lot of room. It's pretty nice that you've got that kind of space to work on the pit lane. But, man, it's a long way from the time you enter to the time you get out of it. I found that interesting. And Brad, or Kevin even pointed that out during the Xfinity race, that it was – you felt like you had a lot of time to screw up if you're the control car, because that car pulls off in the middle of one and two to pull into pit lane, and you drive that whole straightaway and around the middle of three, almost to four before that green flag flies. There's a lot of time for the control car to screw up.
Yeah, by the way, I'm a huge fan of Harvick doing the booth for Fox every Xfinity race. It's really good. He's a really good analyst. I didn't think,
yeah, he's going to end up in TV when his time comes.
Yeah, I think he could be the best one to do it yet. He's very kind of analytical, and he's just – his perspective on the sports just – I don't know. I respect the hell out of him. So, it's just really good. And it doesn't matter whether you have Erik Jones, a young guy up there, or Brad, an experienced guy the week before. It just – the chemistry somehow works together. So it would be interesting, though, if Kyle were to get up there with him.
I'd love to see that.
And that would be, oh man, that'd be ratings in itself.
That would be TV gold.
Yes. But we mentioned that Kyle, you know, won the race. Good run for Ryan Truex, you know, not a one-off race, but his first race until September with Junior Motorsports anyway, finishes second. And if you want to hit on them, that's fine. But Neff, I don't know how to put it into words. I'm impressed as hell with Ryan Sieg this year. They get stage points, they run well, they qualify well. He's got three top tens already in the first four races. Last year only had two in the whole season. So he's definitely taking the next step as a team. And they've got ECR engines this year, which is definitely a better than building their own or leasing from a smaller company. And also they got some RCR chassis. So improvements for Rod Sieg's team.
Yeah, I mean, you're preaching to the choir on that one. I've been on the Ryan Sieg bandwagon for a long time, and he has done some amazing things over the years with no support. And now you're finally starting to see what happens if you get some stuff on the quarter panels on that car. Mm-hmm. They're getting a little bit of money to spend. I mean, they're not drunken sailor spending yet, but they've got enough money to buy competitive equipment. And it's not all on Ryan's shoulders now. The car is doing some work, and you're seeing the results of that. And will we see a Clemens shocks the world kind of thing? Maybe. I don't know if it'll have to. It'll probably have to be one of these standalone events. But I don't even know. I mean, we've seen him up in there mixing it up with the best. That they continue to improve. They've got the money coming in now. As you said, they got quality engines, quality chassis. I don't see any reason that they shouldn't be in the mix of this thing, because we've seen for years that Ryan's got the talent. And it's just like Ross Chastain. You put him in a car that can win, and he's going to win. And I think they're in the process of getting a car that's capable of winning because of the resources that are coming to that team, rather than just jumping in a winning car. And in the end, that may ultimately be better for them, because that will probably sustain them more over the long run, unless, you know, somebody like Penske or something decides to bring him into the fold and give him a shot. But he's a Chevy guy, and I don't know right now that there's a lot of room in Chevy camp for him to have a seat.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've talked to him quite a bit over the past couple of years, and I think out of all the drivers, you know, we saw it with Ross last year, and very well deserved. He worked his ass off to get that opportunity with Chip Ganassi. But out of all the current drivers in the lower two series, I would say he's on top of my list of what I want to see what he can do in a you know, with a big team, either him or Jeremy Clements, because both family run team. I think both have a lot of talent and, you know, do a lot with a little. But especially Ryan this year. I mean, he made the playoffs in 2016. He just does so much with that team, and they only have a few chassis, and they run three. Yeah. They have three drivers. They have Josh Balicki running full time this year, and Jeff Green starting and parking all year. And even Balicki was running top 20 this week. And, you know, last year he was with JP Motorsports and running in the 30s. So they have good equipment. It's just they don't have a lot of it. So they got to be like, they don't even bring backup cars to the tracks. They might bring one between the three cars. So I don't know. I think 10th in points right now. So it's looking good. There's like 13 cars, I think, that could realistically make the playoffs. So that means one's being left out. Hopefully it's not them, because they're doing so well at the beginning of the year. But we'll have to see.
Like I said, I'm completely on board with their bandwagon. And yeah, I would love to see him get a shot at that eight car, you know, that Ryan ran so well this weekend. It'd be cool to see them give him a shot in that eight, just for a race or two, just to see what he could do. Because I honestly think he would be right where Ryan was this weekend, battling up front and having a shot to win.
Indeed. Now, Neff, we're going to Auto Club Speedway this weekend. We got a doubleheader. Who do you got winning the Xfinity and Cup races?
I mean, can we argue that Kyle Busch is going to win the Xfinity race? But as we've gone over the last few weeks, we can't just by default pick him. So we got to pick somebody besides Kyle. And I think you got to give Christopher Bell. Bell's had some bad luck and is just, I think he's head and shoulders above everybody not named Kyle Busch. And so I'm going to go with Christopher Bell on the old 2-miler. And then in the Cup Series, I'm doing Kyle Larson, because it's a 2-mile track and that's where Kyle Larson shines. And as we've mentioned, they're the best Chevy team right now. So I think you'll see Kyle once again figure it out on the 2-mile track and be the winner.
Larson does shine at Fontana, and 2-mile tracks, you know, with Michigan. But for Xfinity, I'm going Tyler Reddick. This guy's kind of on a mission this year. His Twitter game's gold. I know you can't see it, Neff, but someone tweeted.
I can't. Did I not tell you that?
Oh.
I am out of Twitter jail.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, I sent out a tweet last week. I had sent in another appeal and didn't hear back. And just out of the blue, I just tried to log on to Twitter, and it was like, welcome back. And I'm like, well, thank you. And so, yes, I've been back in the Twitter game for about a week. So I'm officially able to see Twitter again. I don't know if I follow Reddick, though. I probably should.
Yeah.
Especially since I'm friends with his crew chief.
He's becoming a must-follow. So I highly recommend following Tyler Reddick on Twitter. Someone said he got lucky winning the championship, and he went off at him. I'm trying to find the tweet as we speak. He might have deleted it, but it was...
Hey. Speaking of going off about winning a championship, did you notice that they have changed the Xfinity promo?
Yeah.
I got a kick out of that, because it was, and I'm sure it was one of those oversight things that happens, because you got so many different layers involved when production of that kind of stuff goes on. But it was a major oversight to not have your 2018 champion, who is still running in your series, not part of your promo for your division. So I did notice this weekend that they mentioned Tyler Reddick prominently in the Xfinity promo, so I was glad to see that.
Yeah, it all started off with a tweet from Jeff Gluck saying Bubba Wallace got mad at someone during the race, and Tyler Reddick kind of went back to the Daytona incident when they went at it on Twitter after the race. He said whoever it was probably forgot to use the brakes. And some fan goes, says the guy who got lucky last year. And then Reddick goes, I'm sorry, but if you look closely, the trophy says champion. It doesn't say got lucky, with a kissy face. And it's a picture of him and the championship. So, but he's running well. He's running really well this year. And obviously, we talked about it a little bit last week. He's the defending champion, obviously, but I mean, he's doing
new organization, yeah. New crew chief.
Yeah, he's doing a lot with them.
It's impressive that they've run as consistently well as they have right out of the box.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, I would consider. This seems so weird that you could say like, oh, you consider him a championship favorite when he's the defending champion, but realistically, he probably shouldn't have won the championship last year, but he did everything right in the playoffs and got, he wasn't the best car all year long, but he was the best car in the playoffs, so he won the championship. So
I don't even know if he was the best car in the final race. It was just they called the best strategy.
Yeah, that's true. Regardless, he's with a new team, and I think that Richard Childress Racing is going back to Victory Lane this weekend, and he might be able to beat Kyle outright. He's been close. He was close at Vegas, and then him and Bell got into each other. So we'll have to see. In Cup, I'm going Kyle Busch. I'd say he gets win number 200 where he got win number one. Why not? Cool. He's really good at Fontana. So I wouldn't be surprised if he were to dominate this race.
Well, like I said, I just hope win 200 is a Cup win. Just because. That would make me happier and not have to hear people whining so much if he wins 200 as a Cup win rather than Xfinity or Trucks. Because if he doesn't win either of them this weekend, then he's running the truck race at Martinsville.
Yeah.
And so we know how that'll work out.
Right. I mean, I think it'll be an interesting race, though, at least in the Cup Series, because of the rules package. I heard that in the test they had or whatever, they only had three cars. They had Truex, Logano, and Suarez. I think it was in January. And they were, like, running each other down to the grass trying to pass each other. So, I mean, I don't know if tire wear is still going to come into play, but I don't know if it's going to be as a big of a factor as it's been in the past.
I don't either. I'm trying to get some crew chiefs to find out how that's been because of the fact that we've got higher corner speeds now than we did before. So I don't know if that has increased tire wear, if it's just changed tire wear, or what. I haven't found out yet, but I'll get some answers.
10-4. Neff, any final thoughts?
Excited to get them back to the East Coast. We got one more on the West, and then we get to go to the Paperclip. But I'm so excited because it's like my favorite track on the schedule there in Richmond.
Indeed.
I'm pretty excited.
Indeed. Well, with that, let's go to my conversation with Ryan Truex. All right, Ryan, you had a fast car all weekend long last weekend in Phoenix, qualified ninth, finished second. Take us through your weekend as a whole.
Yeah, it was a solid weekend, I think, just from the start. Obviously, JRM has a really good kind of baseline package at IFM. Obviously, Allgaier has shown that in the past few years. So, going in, I have a lot of confidence, and we kind of just built off of that baseline. And Taylor and the team all had great adjustments planned for the car. And it seemed like every change we made in practice, anything we did to the car, honestly just helped the balance and made it drive better and have more speed. So, I feel like just as a team effort, everything went smoothly, and there's no issues. So, it made my job really easy, and like I said, practice was pretty much a breeze, and I felt like after second practice, we had a pretty good car for the race. We didn't qualify quite as well as I hoped to, and that kind of hurt us at the start of the race as far as just not having the right lane for the start and kind of getting eaten up on that initial start and losing some track position, but we did all the right things during the race and made the right adjustments to get better and put ourselves in position for the end.
Yeah, and you mentioned after final practice you felt like you had a fast car. Is that when you realized that you could possibly run top five and potentially contend for the win if, you know, if things have fallen your way?
Yeah, I mean, both practice sessions we were a top five car on average. So really it was just about fine-tuning it, you know, getting it just right in traffic and kind of just tuning it to be, you know, good enough on the short run to hang with the top cars, but good enough on the long run to stay with them. It seems like that track, it's hard to get both ends of the spectrum. You see a lot of comers and goers there as far as guys that are doing the short run and can't hold on in the long run and vice versa. So I feel like we gave up a little on the front end of the run at the start of the race. But going into the race, we had a plan, you know, to work on our car if that was the case. And, you know, having that plan and doing those things helped us adjust it so we had the speed on restarts and on the short run to be able to stay in the top five to where our long runs really came into play. So, yeah, I felt good with that to practice. And, you know, it's only thing we get it to the point where you kind of know the spectrum you're in and you know that you're in the range where fine-tuning on it is going to make all the difference in the race.
Yeah, and obviously this was your first of four scheduled races on the year for Junior Motorsports. Where's the confidence level after a strong run right off the bat, you know, with a limited opportunity in the 8 car?
It's really high, for sure. You know, as a driver, I've always felt like I can do it, and I've always, you know, believed in myself. But, you know, when you have a rough year or rough races or, you know, you're not running where people think you should be running, it's easy to kind of absorb all that negative energy, especially with social media as prevalent as it is and you know, your ability to see all the negative stuff all the time. It's definitely easy to get down on yourself and lose confidence. But going into this deal, I knew that, you know, I had to believe in myself and, you know, knowing that I had the equipment around me and the resources around me and people and everything it takes to win races, you know, gave me confidence going in. And even after practice, just to have the speed we have, I felt really good. And I think that just helped me even more going into the race, just knowing that, you know, we were going to have a strong car and we were going to have a chance to battle in the top five. So I definitely feel really good afterwards. Still one spot short of that goal that I had set for myself, but it's definitely it's a good way to start the momentum. Kind of sucks that I won't race for another 2 months after having such a good run, but I'm pretty sure that team will just continue to get better, and having different drivers in there, I think, will help Taylor continue to grow as a crew chief and make him even better when I step back in the seat.
Of course, and you kind of hit on this, but forget the team aspect. For you personally, you know, after losing the ride at Colleague, what's it mean for Ryan Truex to get that strong finish?
It means a lot. You know, regardless of circumstances and you know, how the rides play out in this series and this sport, anytime you lose a ride, no matter what the reason is, it's tough. And from the outside looking in, nobody knows, really, in any situation, knows the full story or knows what happened. So, you know, when the headline comes out and says Ryan Truex loses ride, you know, it's hard to look at that as anything but a negative. So I kind of had to battle through that a little bit. You know, obviously, I wish nothing but the best for Colleague Racing, and that's nothing against them, no fight against them or anything. But, you know, for myself as a driver, I kind of had to put all that stuff behind me and not think about, you know, what people are saying or what people think happened or anything like that. Just, you know, worry about myself and do what's best for me. And I felt like, you know, as a driver and as somebody who I feel like needs to prove himself on the racetrack, I kind of looked at what Ryan Preece has done, what Ross Chastain has done, the guys that have decided to go the route of running less in equipment that is proven to win races and has won races before. You know, I just felt like that was the right way to go for me as a driver. And obviously it took putting some sponsorship together and getting the funding together to do it. But I was lucky enough that JRM had that open seat and I had a good enough relationship with Dale that we were able to kind of streamline the whole process and get everything going really quick. You know, beginning of January, I didn't have a ride, and now here we are, you know, sitting on a second place finish for my first race. So it feels really good that it all came together. And if you would have told me 3 months ago this is where I'd be sitting, I would have told you you're great for sure.
I saw where you stated that you felt validated by the finishing position. Is that because, like you mentioned, you kind of took a bet on yourself, like a Ryan Preece or a Ross Chastain, and, you know, take, you know, in better equipment but lesser rides, and it paid off?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there was nothing I was more worried about or nervous about than going out in this car and not running well and having to sit back and think, well, maybe I just can't get it done. Or maybe there's something wrong with what I'm doing. And as a driver, like I said, it's really, really easy to fall down that path. You know, I've driven for a lot of teams over the past few years, and some have been really good, and some have been, you know, the teams that are still fighting to be a top team and are still building and are still trying to grow the program. And, you know, when you're in those situations and you're the young guy coming in, it's easy to it's kind of easy to be the guy that takes the blame or the one to point the finger at, as, you know, when he's got no experience or he's a young guy, you know, he doesn't have enough experience in these cars to go fast, whatever it is. It's very, very easy as a driver to get down on yourself. So that was the biggest thing for me, was not knowing if, you know, I could get in this car, get in good equipment again, and still get the job done. So be able to do that, it definitely was validating and kind of proof to myself that I can get it done.
Did Dale reach out to you? And if so, what did he say?
Yeah, I mean, me and Dale talk a lot. We text a lot about random stuff. Whenever I'm thinking about a new t-shirt or something, he's like my number one criticizer or approver of shirts. So if I text it to him and he likes it, that's usually a sign that it's good to go. Yeah, we talked a little bit after, you know, during the weekend. I was just telling him about, you know, how great his team was to work for, how, you know, easygoing it was, and just how easy it was to get along with everybody and kind of feel like I was in the right place, you know, as soon as I walked in the shop door for the first time, really. It kind of just felt like home and family to me, which I think just having that relationship with Dale's family for so long and knowing all that for so long, it felt like a natural fit from the start. And, Dale's a guy that I can pick up the phone and talk to whenever I want. So he's somebody that would be straight up with me and honest with me. And yeah, it was cool to get kind words from him. And you know, he's done a great job and all that stuff. I told him I need to race more. So hopefully we can figure out how to get that done.
Yeah, and when you go to a team and you're running a partial schedule, and you've done this in the past, whether it's with Gibbs, MWR in the past, how much of an input do you have on the team? Because obviously Justin, Michael, and Noah, they're running the full season, so how much of an input do you have on their performance too, if at all?
Well, I think any time you get a different driver in, you get different feedback. Uh-huh. And everybody's got a different driving style. I felt like me and Justin had similar feedback over the weekend. You know, he's a veteran of the series, and he's driven these cars really since the new style car with the splitter and everything came out back in 2010, I think. So he's been through all of the different generations of this car and knows, you know, just knows what to expect with these racetracks and changes and all that. So he's a good guy to go talk to and learn from, and I leaned on him a lot, you know, just because he's run so well at this track in the past. But yeah, I mean, anytime you get different feedback, whether it's him, me, you know, when Ryan Preece gets in the car, he's got experience in the Gibbs cars last year, so he can kind of, you know, compare them to what we're running now. And, you know, Noah as well ran a few races for them. So anytime you get different guys behind the wheel, it helps. And like I said, I think it helps, you know, it helps Taylor be able to be a little more diversified in what he can make change-wise and how he can take driver feedback and turn it into an adjustment. You know, that's probably going to be one of his biggest challenges this year, but I think that's going to just make him stronger as a crew chief.
Got it. Now, I got a few more for you. You said the confidence level's high after the run, as it should be. But how challenging is it to get into a rhythm when you're only got these limited opportunities? And like you said, you don't really know next time you'll be in the car.
Yeah, the past few years I've run full time, you know, once in the Cup Series and once in Xfinity, so it's a little different coming from that back to racing part time. You know, before that every year is kind of the way it went for me.
Right.
And I feel like I've gotten a lot better at filling that off time and finding things to do to keep myself challenged and keep myself growing as a driver. You know, there's really only so much you can do outside of the car to stay sharp and, you know, still have that mental clarity and focus for when you get back in the car. But I feel like I started to develop a good, you know, a good way to keep myself busy outside of it. And this year especially, I've done a lot more on the training side of things. Mm. Keeping my body challenged outside of the car, so when I get in the car, it's a lot easier. Just on my body, physically, mentally, and I think that helped me a lot this weekend. Probably the best I've felt in a car in a while. And some of that's just the team having all the little things to where I don't have to worry about them. And it comes down to just where the belts are in the seat or the seat insert, not having any weird spots in it or anything like that. All that little stuff adds up as a driver, especially when you're out in the car every week. Know what to expect when you sit in that seat and drive off in the turn one. So to have that team that is so good at that kind of stuff makes it a lot easier on me, for sure.
Yeah, two more for you, Ryan. You know, you said with the performance, you hope to prove to yourself that, you know, what you can do in top tier equipment. You did that. Now, what do you hope, I guess I should put it, what do you hope you prove to other team owners in the garage?
I think just that, you know, I can, in the right equipment, I can go out and run where I'm supposed to and put a good race together. You know, I didn't really feel like I had any flaws in the way I executed the race. I feel like I did everything, you know, everything that I could have done right, I did right. Didn't make any mistakes as far as pit road or restarts or anything like that. You know, kept off four corners of the car clean and still had speed at the end and was there at the end when it counted. And that's the number one thing in these races, is just being able to work on your race car and know what you need in your car to make it better throughout the race and be there at the end of the race and have a shot to win the race. And that's something that I feel like I've gotten really good at, especially in the past year and a half. You know, and to be able to get in fast equipment and go fast in it and do everything right. You know, I feel like that's the number one thing I needed to prove, and I felt like I did that. So, you know, hopefully the right people notice.
Now, I'll get you out of here on this one. Obviously, you attempted to qualify for the 500 with Tommy Baldwin Racing. Second place finish this past weekend, as we mentioned. Could there be other opportunities, you think, outside of the three remaining races of the JRM this year?
There could. You know, things change all the time, and you know, rides open up all the time, and there's plenty of different series to go run in. As of right now, I don't have anything else, but like I said, that could change. And, you know, having a run like this weekend, I think definitely helps on all fronts. You know, it helps me on the sponsorship side, and it helps me on the side of, you know, just teams taking a look at me and maybe thinking of me as a guy that can fill in or close the gaps in somebody's schedule or anything like that. So I'm definitely open to really anything. You know, as long as it's equipment, I feel like I can go out and perform and prove that I can get the job done.
Cool, Ryan. Thanks for joining the show, and I hope to see you at the track again.
All right, thank you.
All right, everyone. That wraps up this week's edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. It's always good to see drivers make the most of their opportunities, and I would say that's exactly what Ryan Shurek did this past weekend in Phoenix, getting that runner-up finish for Junior Motorsports. But again, make sure to keep on sending in those ratings and reviews, and until next week's show, where we review racing at Auto Club Speedway, we out.